all this stuff was really impressive for me, and I decided to quit my job and started to study Bitcoin. And then I started to understand the Austrian economic. So I started to understand what happened in Venezuela, what happened in Argentina in terms of inflation or all this money printing, all the stuff. Yes, I started to understand the technological part of Bitcoin, and I was shocked. I was thinking like, it's too good to be true.
Welcome everybody, Frank here, Francisco, joined by another Francisco today, Francisco Calderon, coming to us from Latin America. Super excited to have Francisco on the show. We had the Cuba Bitcoin team on the show a few episodes back, and I recently just did a piece on some of the work that's happening or with the Bitcoin research team in Bolivia, and Francisco's name kept coming up in these conversations. So I wanted to reach out to him also because I personally have spent some time in Venezuela. Francisco is from there originally, so we'll touch a little bit on Venezuela, but I want to focus more on the work that Francisco is doing with P2P technology, particularly with Mostro these days. And yeah, but let me stop it there for just a second. Francisco, let me hand the mic over to you. Could you give a brief introduction of yourself, if you don't mind?
Hey, Frank. Hey, everyone. Thank you for inviting me. Well, I'm just, as I told you before, I'm a software developer. I have like more than 20 years working as a developer. But one day when I understood Bitcoin, I say I can't keep working as just a developer, and I want to move to work on Bitcoin, on something related to Bitcoin, because I'm from Venezuela, and that shaped me, what this Venezuelan situation political and economical situation shaped me as who I am right now. And I decided to do something with my skills as a developer to help people that are happy, that can live situation like I did before. I'm still living in Buenos Aires, so I like inflation and all this stuff.
Yeah, things are maybe a little bit better than they were in Venezuela, but Argentina has its own inflation issues for sure. Can you take us a little bit through that journey? So you've been in the FOSS, the free and open source software space for, I think, like 20 years at this point. So doing things before Bitcoin. As you said, you were inspired to work on Bitcoin once you understood it. Did you come to understand Bitcoin while you were still in Venezuela?
Yeah, I had a long time since more than 20 years working with open source. And we, a long time before in 2000, we were doing events showing to the people how important is open source for society. At that time, people didn't understand much because software was not that everyone have a direct contact. But right now with mobiles, smartphones, it's easier to explain how important is the open source. And I'm linked to technology and open source and all this stuff. I knew about Bitcoin, but I was thinking, at that time in Venezuela, I was thinking like, this is too good to be true. So I ignore it. And when I came to Argentina in 2015, I had the need to send money to my family in Venezuela and started to experiment with beacons without understanding. I started to use it, but without understanding, like in a philosophical way or technical way. But at the end of 2017, I started to understand the technological part of Bitcoin, and I was shocked at all this electrical and digital signature and asymmetric, how they use asymmetric encryption to create the addresses and send Bitcoin. All this stuff was really impressive for me, and I decided to my job and started to study Bitcoin. And then I started to understand the Austrian economic. So I started to understand what happened in Venezuela, what happened here in Argentina in terms of inflation or all this money printing, all the stuff. But the response is the first time and second time, third time, I didn't use Bitcoin. Just when I had the real need. Oh, I had the need in Venezuela because we have inflation, but I ignored it. I was thinking like it's too good to be true.
Interesting. So too good to be true. You learn how to use it. Well, practically, you experience using Bitcoin to send money back to Venezuela come 2017. At that point in Venezuela, I'm sure there was a lot of need for that. I think that was around the peak of when things got really, really bad under the Maduro regime. 2017 was a really rough time. I'm actually going to come back to that, what's happening in Venezuela. I'd like to keep going with some of your work as a developer. So you leave your job working in broader open source or software tech. You start studying Bitcoin. And then what is your transition to working in Bitcoin? How long did you study it? And then what was your first job or your first task working in the Bitcoin space?
Yes. When I quit my job, it was like January maybe in 2018. And I started to study. I just said to my partner, like, I'm going to be 3 months studying and I have enough money to keep paying bills and I'm going to find a job. But the main idea for me was take a studied Bitcoin and find a job on the space, Bitcoin space. I created a Lightning Network website for bets called MicroBet, and you can do like small bets of 100 satoshis or maybe more on football, basketball, and baseball. And people, you put the bet and someone bet. You put the prediction and people bet against or in favor. So it was like a game, like an experiment. And at that time was like 10 websites online. So it got a little bit famous in that microspace, and I got the job to work in a startup from Canada and a change. So I started to work with them on working on their Lightning part. So that was really good because I kept learning about Lightning and earning money on Bitcoin and keep there and doing stuff at the same time doing open source stuff, ideas or experimental stuff. So that helped me to keep going and keep learning and keep doing stuff on Bitcoin. Yes.
That's so something more for fun than anything. You weren't necessarily creating like a Lightning wallet or something. You were doing something almost like a little bit of a game online with the technology. That's very cool. And what year was that again, if you don't mind just reminding me?
That was in like maybe April of 2018 was MicroBet.
Okay.
Or yes, something like that. And yes, time happened, passed, and I was started to work with for 1 year with RGB, and you know these are the protocol. And then I started to work on LMP2P bot. I had people from Venezuela asking me, "We have," they told me, "we have the need of sending," because in 2017-18 was a huge problem there in Venezuela. And then they were using local Bitcoin to send, if people in Venezuela were using local Bitcoin, but local Bitcoin closed. So in 2020, they came to me asking me if there is a way of do something like a local Bitcoin on Telegram, because we have a Telegram group where people started to say, "Hey, I want to buy $100. No, not much, like $50, $20. And people in Venezuela wanted to get Bitcoin. People outside want to send Bitcoin there because the people inside can send bolivares to their family. So it was a small community, and it was they can trust because it was a small community, but it started to grow. And they say, we need to have some kind of escrow because we're going to get more people and can get scammed. And I started to do experimental stuff because I had an idea of using whole invoices as an escrow. And this, then we have a call with people from Lightning Labs. They were the first one who implemented the whole invoice, which is I don't know if you know technically, but it's a invoice that don't, when you pay it, the creator of the invoice don't show you the payment. So the payment
Okay.
stayed like in a waiting payment. And so
Understood.
it's, yes, and see something happen, you have to cancel. It's like a failed payment. You don't have to send the money and send it back. So you save the routing fees going and going back, routing fees. And you also, it's good because you don't have the money in reality. You have almost you have the money, but you don't have it. You need to settle the invoice. So it was a good idea. And we talked with them and they say, oh, yes, it's a good idea. You can try. And I started to do it on the Telegram bot and it worked. And we started like organically. Like I say, don't put much more money because this is dangerous, it's experimental. People started to put $50, $100. And we started to fix bugs and working and grow a lot. Today, we have like more than 30,000 users. In monthly, we have 1,300 users active monthly. And we have a lot of people using it. And it's a good, really good project. But the problem is on Telegram, it's centralized. So we don't know if Telegram is going to close someday, or we know that Pavel Durov have some contacts with Russian government.
Right.
Also, he was in jail by France, and they've released him. And we suppose they have an agreement of sending information, having a chance, because they put him in jail because he didn't want to keep information of the people. But now they've released him. So we know he have an agreement with them. So we don't have information from the users, but Telegram have information. And we do this because we're thinking about people in Venezuela, in Argentina, in Cuba, in Nicaragua, Iran, people who lives mostly, or people who live in places where it's a life or death situation, moving money. So we started to do most of it.
It's amazing to hear, and I'm happy that you shared those numbers. I was curious as to how many people were using this. So I'm curious also, you've worked on RGB, which was a pretty big project, and now you're doing this very specific thing, Mostro. As I said, it kept coming up, or I didn't mention this specifically, but I've been having a lot of conversations with people, and more people seem to be using Mostro. And as you said, it's a lifeline for people. It's a way for people to change money, to get money into a country where otherwise there are either currency controls or maybe the country is cut off from the SWIFT system, the international banking system. My question here is, how do you sustain yourself? You don't have to get into all of the economics, but is it a way to make money? How do you monetize something like Mostro? I don't fully understand how it works.
Yes, like my dream, like my professional dream was working on open source, but that's really difficult because you don't get money because most of the time you don't get money. So since, I don't know, maybe 2020, some people started to give donation and create organization to fund developers. And I right now, Monster is getting funds. It's getting funds by Human Rights Foundations and OpenSet. And we keep the project because of that. If we didn't have that support, I was working on something else and doing like on my weekend mostro, but it's a full-time job. It's big, huge. We have like more than 20 repositories and like really important projects inside mostro organization. We have like five. We need full-time people working there. We're receiving some collaborations, but most of the people that are working full-time needs to get funded. And we're like growing in a way that developers that have 1 or 2 years working on Mostro can ask their own grant or some organizations. So the project is on right now is on production. It's a big project and it was really difficult to do. Right now is we have the advantage of having AI because we're doing better things, but when we started we didn't have it. So we did a lot of experimental and try and say and see that it doesn't work. We have to try again. We have to create a protocol again, experiment to create the server and the client. And all this stuff need full time. So
Okay.
we need the for now we have grants, but we had the idea of have a foundation in the future. And so we try to have a foundation like we add a fee, a cut of the fee to send to Mostro Development Fund. Right now it's like I don't know 200 sats. We're getting 200 sats daily, but
Okay.
maybe in the future we have a lot of projects working, a lot of nodes, Mostro nodes working. We can have enough money to pay developers without asking to HRA for open source. We think it's possible. Let's see.
Okay. It's amazing how much it's grown, and I feel like it's this amazing story in Bitcoin that doesn't really get a lot of press and attention. That's one of the reasons that I reached out to you, because I feel like it's really a lifeline. And I just want to double check. So people are using this now. I know in Bolivia, there's like a fork of Mostro, I think specifically for the Bolivian context, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's Cuba, Venezuela, and then Spain, I think, as well. Is there, or in Colombia, if I'm not mistaken. And when I talk about this, so it's open source technology. When we talk about each country having its own version of it, what does that really mean? If it's the same sort of technology that anybody can use if they have access to the internet, what does it mean that there's sort of a different version of it for each country?
Yes, the main goal is to remove the single point of failure. With the Telegram bot, I can get like a judge. I live in Argentina. I can have get a mail from a judge telling me you have to shut down the Telegram bot, and I have to do it because I live here. I can move to another country and get another letter there. So the main idea is to have people that easily can create a node, Mostro node, and if they do it, maybe if they are doing it in Afghanistan and they don't want to say they are who they are, they can run it and it's going to be really difficult to find them. But it's going to give in a service for people there because it's on roster. So if you are a node operator, and you publish events, Mostro events in your Afghanistan Mostro, and you push it only in relays you trust. Maybe you have relays in another country, so it's going to be impossible for authorities there to know who you are. So that is the idea.
Could you talk about this interaction? And I'm asking this as someone who's not extremely technical. So you're running a Mostro node. You have a Mostro node, and this is now intertwined with Nostr. And so you can publish. What are you publishing to the relays via Nostr? So you have the Mostro node. What's getting published to the relays?
Clients that are using, let's say, the mobile app, they create an order or take an order and they send the message, a gift wrap event is an encrypted event to the relay directed to the node, Mostro node. the Mosul node get that message and publish the order in Noster. So someone, if it's a new order. So someone can take the order, but send an encrypted event to the Mosul. So everything is encrypted and it's really difficult to understand what is happening if you are observing the network on Noster. And it's not possible that you know the IP address unless you have the relay. We think governments in the future are going to create their own relays to watch people's movement. But the main idea is to have different people running the node. So maybe in different geographical location, and people in their geographical location use their own node. For example, it's going to be really difficult for me to, if I having a node here where I live and speak Spanish and English, if I have someone taking an order or creating an order from Saudi Arabia and they only speak Arab. So how am I going to solve a dispute? So the main idea is to remove this centralization of the Telegram bot and giving tools for the people to create their own infrastructure for free. It's open source. They can do whatever. That's the idea.
Amazing. Right now, I feel like there is this affiliation with Mostro in Latin America, in Spanish-speaking countries. Is part of the issue that's a linguistic challenge, that people who are just speaking Spanish are using this because, as you just said, the communication is in Spanish? And do you foresee people from other languages or people who speak other languages in other countries eventually adopting the technology as well?
Yeah, probably it's because we have this Telegram group and many people speak Spanish. But we're having people in Africa. So I'm interested in Africa and Latin America because we need it most. But if this project works, I have in mind to solve problems in places with slow internet and having difficulties, if it works in those places, it's going to work in Europe and the United States. So
right.
My main goal is to keep hearing what they say, what they need, and fix the problem they are having.
When it comes to these problems, like what's an example of a problem? I don't know if that would be maybe too technical of a question to ask, but what's the sort of troubleshooting or development that you end up having to do on a regular basis?
For example, slow internet. We have a big community of in Cuba of the Telegram bot, and they are telling me that when internet is really slow, the Telegram is getting intermittent the service of Telegram. But they told me like they're testing Mostro without internet and no without energy, without power, and with one bar of mobile data, and they could do a whole operation on Mostro in that really difficult situation. So we have small events on Mostro. They're encrypted twice, but still they're like 1K bytes, like 1,000 bytes. And those even if you have a slow internet, 1,000 bytes are a good number, good size of packages we send on Mostro. So I think Cuba was the
most difficult situation that you've had to deal with, most challenging?
Yes. The most challenging situation. So I keep focusing on Cuba, places in Africa where they have really slow internet, and asking to them, okay, tell me what's happening, let me how I can fix it, because it's like a extreme situation, and we wanted to see it working there.
Okay, so you're building this for the most for the hardest places to have it function. My first question that comes to mind here, please excuse me if this is not a very smart question, but is there any way that you see like a potential integration with eCash, get something that can work offline, or is that something that's incompatible based on the technology you've developed? Am I not thinking along the right lines, I guess is my question, or can eCash become a solution here as well?
Yes, it's there is some discussion created in our repository, but we have I'm open to this to explore that proposal, but we're waiting for some contribution for someone to start working on it. But we have like a milestone and a lot of issues to solve. That are priority, because still we still are stabilizing the protocol
Stabilizing.
and stabilizing and all this stuff. But maybe if someone don't get that issue, but we're still getting some people asking, we can add it more high on this priority list. But yes, I think it's a good idea to have it like an option.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that the team from Cuba Bitcoin, they built their own version of Cashew, I think. They built Kahu, and it's easier for them to use, especially because you have these blackouts and the internet just completely gets shut off. We're seeing something comparable, not for the same reason, but we're seeing something comparable in Iran right now as well, where people are operating without internet right now. So it seems like that's obviously the most difficult situation, but it's amazing to know that people are still thinking about ways to potentially handle a situation like this. Truly amazing. How big do you feel like something like Mostro could get? Meaning, is it something that only technical people or people who are technically inclined feel comfortable engaging with, or do you look to make it easier so that it's something that the average person thinks to use frequently?
Yes, I don't know how big it's gonna be, but I hope to be an option some countries where they need it. But we have in mind constantly that our clients have to be for all people to use it, so it's more difficult for all people, or people that have not technical skills.
Skills.
If you see, if you see, I don't know if you try our mobile app.
I have not, so Mostro mobile
Okay.
app. Yeah.
Yes, we have it on App Store. We still are not gonna put it on Google Play, but we have plans. We don't want. We want to this grow organically because we are still want to improve some stuff. But yes, the mobile, I think we have a really good UX for mobile. Is there our main idea is to make it simple. For example, when you install the mobile app, we don't ask you anything. Just a seat is created for you, and you have like a notification that never goes away until you back up that seat. But you can, since the beginning, just open the app the first time and take an order. And
Understood.
you can select your node, if for example Bolivia node or Colombia node or the default node. But after you do that, you just can take an order and start working. And it's like just touching buttons. I think it's really intuitive. We can make it better, and we will. And we're just working on it.
Amazing. So in terms of having it grow organically, and I can understand reasons why you wouldn't want to try to put it through like the proper app stores, is it also, are we just in the early days of this technology and you just sort of, maybe it's misunderstood and regulators don't really understand it. So is it better that it sort of serves the population it needs to serve right now? Like a population that really needs this, as you said, as a lifeline versus trying to reach more people? Are you primarily just focused on making sure the people who need it most have access to it for the time being? Is that the correct way to maybe say what your focus is?
Yes, I think I'm really not interested in motor being a big thing, like in Europe. Everyone works using motor. I don't care.
Yeah, understand.
I don't want to. I think that is the way. I don't want to run my own Mostro. We have the default Mostro node. I don't want to run it because I already am running the Telegram bot, and everyone knows I'm running the Telegram. And it's good that I live in Argentina, which they are more relaxed with this, the authorities. But I know everyone in Europe is don't want to do that. Or maybe if they run a Mostro node, I'm gonna do it like a pseudonym,
Anonymously.
pseudonymously. For example, I had this week I have a call with someone from London, a community there, Bitcoin community, and they were keep asking me about if I know about the legal stuff or regulation on Europe. And I say, to be honest, I'm not, and I just wanted to work on the technology. That is because I doing this for people to create their own nodes, but I don't want. I just want to focus on building the technology and not running a node. I have one node because I need to have a default node right now. But when we have like most stable nodes, like we know they are solid, I'm gonna remove my default node and leave it. Like you have to decide what node we have. In the mobile app, we have a message to link to the people, like short message, like we're telling to the people the operator is the one. When you are using this node, you are accepting you are under the rules of the operator. The code developers, the developers are not, we can control that. We are creating the tools for people. The thing we are doing now is creating something called Mostro Community, where we are helping communities, established community, Bitcoin communities, to create their own Mostro node. But we started this because we want to talk with the community, hear them, see what people are in their community, and see that they are like find out if they are real people or scammers behind our community. Because with Mostro, you can create, if you're a scammer, we know the scammer are going to create their own Mostro to get people in a scam. So the thing is, we created a mobile app and we are adding all these communities that we know they are not scammers, but still we don't know.
It's hard, right? That's
It's
simple.
high. Yes. But I think there are more good things that we can guess from this that one scammer, I don't know, one bad situation. But I think we're helping more people than people that can get, I don't know, hurt a bad situation.
I think that's a good way to look at it for sure. It's really it's remarkably exciting stuff for some of I'm sure that on some level, because you're interfacing with people who are living in very difficult scenarios, let's just say Cuba, for example. I'm curious how much you end up learning about the country and the people there. I mean, obviously, you learn about what their needs are or whatnot, but I'm sure that it gives you a lot of information about what's actually happening on the ground in certain places versus maybe what we hear on the news. So, for a place like Cuba, you're from a country that went through a similar sort of socialist takeover, communist takeover. What would you tell people, like for the average person who is maybe hearing a little bit about Cuba, what are we missing? Like, what's actually happening on the ground that we're not, that information that the average person maybe isn't getting?
Yeah, I think Venezuela and Cuba have a lot of things in common, and people are really similar. And we have, I'm also know people from Bitcoin Cuba, and I'm going to every year to Oslo Freedom Forum where I met Cuban activists, and we talk about it, and we keep the contact with people in Cuba or people outside Cuba wanting to connect with in Cuba with LGBT vote on Monster. So I think I have a we have good connection with Cuba, and what I think the real situation there is really bad, because I think everyone knows they are out of energy.
Right.
And it's not only because of the blockade that they're having right now because of Donald Trump blockade, but also because the before that the dictatorship there started to blockade the users from doing commerce or speak freely. So now there I see every I follow like Cuban news, and the in the government in Cuba, the dictatorship is starting to talk about, oh, we should see what we are doing bad. Maybe we must to open a little bit the economy. So after 50 years, I don't know, 50, 60 years, you think right now you're gonna open the economy? It's because they know that their ideas are. It doesn't work. That doesn't work.
Right.
They still need to keep talking about Cold War and all this stuff, because they need the.
Yeah. Do you, on a certain level, I mean, their argument, the argument of imperialism and what America did to Cuba, Latin America, I understand the argument. I do get it. But I think what a lot of people miss is that they might be right in their argument, but it doesn't mean that they're right in doing what they're doing on the ground to their people, because people are suffering in a really sort of heavy way. And it's interesting, here in New York, I went to the court when Nicolas Maduro was brought to Brooklyn. I went to the courtroom, and we had a lot of New Yorkers saying, no, free Venezuela, release Nicolas Maduro. And there's just this understanding, there's this, I think people have this idea of what socialism is or what that authoritarian control is, and I think they think it's a lot nicer than it really is. And so it creates a difficult political situation where, sure, like even if you look at Venezuela, they remove Maduro in a way that's very unconventional. That's probably a nice word to put it. And obviously, certain Americans feel like we shouldn't have done this. And I understand that perspective. But then there's most Venezuelans who I speak with say, I don't care. I just want anything to essentially change. I'm curious from your perspective as a Venezuelan, when you watched that, when you watched Maduro be captured, what was your initial reaction? And maybe what is your reaction now after some time?
Well, my initial reaction was to party.
Okay.
It was it. Think about this. Venezuela is dealing in a dictatorship, but two people that are responsible of a lot of torture, disappearing, and killing of opposition, they are paying what they did. So I think Maybe it's not the justice we wanted, because we wanted to, like, Venezuelan and court judge them. But still, it's justice. Maybe it's because United States, Donald Trump wants to buy oil from Venezuela. I don't care. Okay. I just want them to pay. So I'm happy because of this. And now we see, like, the Chavistas in Venezuela, they are mutating. They're removing photos of Chavez and Maduro. And they're removing the red color and putting blue.
Is
that starting to? Yes. I'm starting to hear, like, El Chavismo Azul, the blue Chavismo.
I have heard of this. Yeah, what is this? Yeah. I don't know what this is. Yeah.
It's like they're removing symbols of Chavismo.
What does the blue Chavismo symbolize? I know red symbolizes the socialist revolution. Red usually is that.
There is
that
no sort of symbolism. They are just trying to, like, put a, since January 3rd, is like the bad Chavismo, and now they are good Chavismo. Yesterday they say they removed 12,000 of corruption policies.
Corrupt policies or corrupt maybe rules or laws or something like
not,
that.
Not rules. The police.
Oh, police. Police. Like, yeah, la fuerza, like...
The guys, the policemen.
Yeah. Okay.
They removed 12,000. That's crazy. So, since right now you just realized you have 12,000 of policemen and corruption, that's crazy. So, if that had no sense to me. Also, now they're trying to tell, like, oh, now we're doing good stuff because we didn't know all this bad stuff were happening before January 3rd. So now they're trying to sell, like, the blue Chavismo.
Wow.
Like, they want still be in power. So they're doing all this stuff to make Donald Trump happy. And Donald Trump don't care about democracy in Venezuela. They want to get maybe a lot of money from United States and to United States. So if they can get the North American oil companies going back to Venezuela, that would be amazing for the United States. But they don't want it because they say we need to have constitutional rights in Venezuela because we know that Chavismo are going to expropriate us if they want. They know because they get a lot of bad treatment before. Yep. So they're trying to put, like, a balance and convince all these oil companies in the United States to going back to Venezuela and make a lot of money for United States, and everything is good with Trump and they keep the power. That is what's happening right now.
Right. That all makes sense. But I had not heard about this blue Chavismo wave. And I understand it, but
it's like we have 2 weeks looking blue everywhere and removing Chavismo.
Wow. Okay. Absolutely wild. My last question for you is, you very much believe in open source technology. You obviously believe in Bitcoin, the Lightning Network, all of this technology that you build on and that you build with. Do you think that we will live in a world that, generally speaking, on a major level, gets better because of this technology? Now, I know it's getting better for the people you work with, small pockets of people who understand the technology, but does it end up having a huge global impact that benefits the average human being on planet Earth, in your mind?
Yes. Yes, definitely. I believe in open source everything in the world. To be honest, after Monstro, I have in mind a project that I already started with a friend, but I have it like in pause right now, which is electronic voting system open source electronic system, which uses Noster as a transport and authentication and uses blank signature for keeping the secrecy of both. And we wanted to make, like Mostro, a set of tools for people to make their own elections. So imagine you live in a remote town somewhere in the world, and you can decide, like, okay, we have money right now, but we can decide to wait for the government send us money or help us or organize election. We can use this open source tool for both, and we can, instead of elect someone for decide for us, a mayor, we can put ideas. So we can use this tool for elect ideas, publish ideas and elect the ideas without removing the politics, the politicians. What I want is remove the politicians and make the ideas where the central of the democracy. So we can have tools for make easy and cheap people organize themselves without having someone to decide. And probably you have a mayor in a corrupt small village that they're going to hire their family and they're going to get money from the state and they are not going to work. Or one day they're going to work, but all days they are not working. Instead, we can make a good, like a transparency tools. So this project of electronic voting is just something we want to do, but I want to do more tools for transparency that you can use it in public institution, but also in private organizations. So the main idea is to give to the people auditable tools to see what people are doing with your money, for example, or in the building you're living, what they are doing. So I think it's only with open source we can do all this, and I am very positive of all the impact that open source can do for us. And now I think with AI is way easier to develop all this stuff and make it better.
Yeah, the average person, are you a believer in vibe coding, that the average person can start contributing to open source through different AI tools, OpenClaw, vibe coding, that kind of stuff?
Yes, but we have to reinvent the way of we create software. So it's not only like you ask to the computer and just send a patch, because you need to test it.
Right.
Now we're working with specifications. So we're using specification driven development, SDD. And if we teach this to the average people can be developers. Just create the good specification and test it and check it and see if it works. And then that can be accepted. But we're receiving some contributions of people that just put a question in ChatGPT and give us something that doesn't work. But we will get there. We will get to a point where people will know how to do good contributions using AI.
Okay. Poco a poco, a little bit, one step at a time. Francisco, this was a real treat. I hope to meet you in person, ideally, you know, sometime maybe this year. I might be at the Oslo Freedom Forum. I don't know if you'll be there this year as well.
Yes, but, I'll be there.
Cool. Very cool. I think the work you're doing is amazing. And I appreciate you taking some time to talk with me, because I know that you've given some presentations in Spanish. I appreciate you doing this in English, because I think you're an amazing Bitcoiner, an amazing open source developer, but your story and your name is not well known as it should be, in my very humble opinion. I think that you're incredible at what you do, and I think that it's very clear that what you do is very driven by the need for it and the ideology behind it. The fact that your first experience with Bitcoin was sending money back to your family in Venezuela, and now you help to facilitate things like this for people around the world, especially people who are living in some of the most trying, most difficult areas of planet Earth today. So your humility and your decency, I think, is incredible. You were sort of like a myth in my mind. Like, is Francisco Calderon real? I keep hearing his name. Maybe he's just like, maybe I made him up or something. But you are real, and the work you do is very real. And it's been a pleasure to speak with you. You're really you're an amazing human being. Where can people follow what you're doing? Follow you on Noster X. Where can they find your work?
Yes, people can find me Noster, and you can write Megrunch. And then
so I'm gonna spell that for people who are listening. That's at NEGRUNCH. Negrunch.
And the same in Twitter. In X, the same thing.
Negrunch. Perfect. Yeah. Again, Francisco, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. The pleasure is all mine. I look forward to meeting you in person. Nice and as yeah. All pleasure is all mine. And thank you to everyone for listening. And we'll talk soon, everybody. Take it easy.
Yes. Bye. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.